Are we good? Hey, all right. We're going to start a minute early. We went long last time, and I'm going to fly through this first part because I want to make sure we get to some of our panel time, which I think is the most probably impactful for you guys, where you're going to get to ask some questions. We'll have quite a few different ages, personalities up here from, you know, high school student all the way up to mom and dad, and so want to get to that. Before we get started, my name's Hunter House. If I don't know you, I work with 7th through 12th graders here at Fellowship. I am not an expert on teens or technology, and so apologies that y'all have to listen to me a little bit, but this is one of the biggest felt needs that we see in FSM, is parents asking, like, what do we do about Snapchat and Instagram and the Facebook and Twitter and all these other questions, and how do we help monitor our kids and what they're being exposed to, all that kind of stuff. So we're going to dive into that a little bit this morning. Let me pray for us. Lord, thank you for this time where we can get away, and even though we're not, you know, opening your word and teaching straight from it, God, we're asking you to be here and guide these conversations as we are taking these principles from our relationship with you, and they're intersecting everyday life. How do we live for you in this technological world? And so guide us, Lord, be with us, and I pray that you would speak through me and everyone else who will be up here this morning. We love you. Amen. Well, as we talk about technology, we've got Apple up here. It's one of the most iconic logos, right, when it comes to technology. If you don't have an iPhone, you are shunned by people who do have an iPhone when they're trying to text you in a group text or whatever. I'm looking at you, Drew March. And so it makes it real difficult for those of us who have one. And have you ever, though, thought about the significance of this logo from a Christian perspective? Right? An apple with a piece taken out of it. Now, I don't think that when Steve Jobs, and is it Steve Wozniak? Am I culturally relevant? Okay. When they were coming together to form this company, that was probably their thinking of, oh, let's go back to the first sin of Adam and Eve and form our whole company around that. But I think Satan has a little bit of a sense of humor that this company, and really just technology in general, something that has transformed our world in so many positive ways, also can be one of the biggest hindrances for people, not just students, being healthy, that there are a lot of negatives. And so I want to talk a little bit about just the rate of change, how students are changing. And by the way, the rate of change is so rapid. One of our leaders was joking with me after the service. He goes, that was great, but you're going to have to do another one in 6 months because everything's going to change. And we're like, you're right. But it changes so rapidly. When I was in high school, if I had gone around passing out pictures of myself to people at school and said, hey, do you like this? Do I look good? Anything you want to say about it? Like, people would look at me as really weird. Or if a girl were to take nude pictures of herself and just pass them around to certain high schoolers, say, what do you think? Like, feel really weird back in the day, but that's Tuesday or Wednesday nowadays. It's normal. It's the way that things are changing. Here are some statistics on high schoolers. So a lot of these statistics are taken from this research survey called Monitoring the Future. This is the 2015 statistics because I got them from a book that I'll tell you about called iGen. But 28% of 2015 high school seniors did not have a driver's license their senior year. Think about that. When I was 16, I'm sure most of you, when you turned 16, like, you got a driver's license immediately, even if you didn't have a car. That way you could take mom and dad's car somewhere and have independence. But nowadays, kids push that back. And why is that happening? And I think it's kind of twofold, as are a lot of these statistics that we'll talk about. One is that students are so connected that they don't feel the need to go out. So it's like, why would I want to have to pay for my own insurance, pay for a car, pay for gas, when mom and dad are going to take me somewhere, or I'll just be connected with people here, and that's fine with me. I think that's one aspect of it. But the other side would be that a lot of kids are growing up in a cocoon where parents, because they're so fearful of what's out there, are ending up parenting in a way that they provide lots of fun, lots of engaging things for kids to do, but very few responsibilities. And they grow up less prepared to jump into the world than they ever have. In fact, the percentage of kids who've never dated, never driven, never had alcohol, or never held down a job, the percentage of those kids is up 25%. So more and more kids have never done those things. And I'm not saying that our high schoolers need to be drinking alcohol. I'm just giving you a statistic, okay? That kids aren't engaging the world more than ever. And so in a world that is so connected, you would think that they'd be growing up faster than they ever have, but kids are actually growing up way slower than they ever have in history. And a lot of it is due to this thing. Only 26% of 2015 high schoolers regularly hung out with friends after school, so on a daily basis. Think about that. 2001, it was over half. People just hung out after school. That's what you did. But nowadays, 1 in 4 actually go hang out with friends. Everybody else either goes to an activity or really comes home, turns on Netflix, sits on the couch, hops on Instagram, messages people, Snapchats, whatever. That's kind of the new normal in a lot of ways. And some of that is, you know, because parents don't want kids out. And so we're so big on protecting because we're scared of this world that we forget about parenting and preparing kids to be launched, which they will be launched one day, whether we like it or not. Studies are showing that teens are working less, spending less time on homework, and going out less with friends. So what in the world are they doing? Just hanging out with people on this thing, right? Look at the statistics from the same survey. This is an average daily hour for teens on these different platforms. So texting, about 2.25 hours. Internet, 2. Television, 2 hours. Gaming, 1.5 hours. Video chat, 30 minutes. Now, this is an average, so certain kids, your kids are going to be higher in one, lower in the other. But on average, if you add these up, you know how many hours that is? Over 8. And when you think about the fact that a kid is in school and sleeping about 16 hours a day, what's 16 plus 8? There's their whole day. Now, I get that they're multitasking with a lot of these things, right? So there are some free hours where they're not staring at a screen, but it's not very much. They have instant access through a phone, through a computer, through whatever. Another recent college survey showed that college students switch between their screens on their computer on average every, what do you think, 20 minutes? 10 minutes? Minute? So they did a survey where they just took screenshots every 5 seconds to see how often college students were switching. Every 19 seconds on average. That they're just constantly boom, boom, boom. We live in this instant gratification world where you just scroll and find things you like and scroll through things you don't. And we're forgetting how to actually concentrate on things, to stay in something for a long time. People can't hold down the same job for as long anymore. They always want something different. Right? They get bored doing the same thing. Reading is harder because it's so hard to read a book and actually find something meaningful. Whereas if I scroll, I just kind of see what I like, see what I don't like. It's pictures, all that kind of stuff. Which, side note, we're going to talk about a few practicals, but practical number one would be if your kids do not have a physical Bible, please get them a Bible. One that is nice, that they'll want to open, that they'll want to take notes in. I haven't counted in our room, but my estimate would be probably 25% of our FSM kids bring a Bible on a Sunday morning. The others are relying on this, and this is not a substitute. It's just not the same thing. And so encouraging your child to like, hey, let's practice opening this daily. Why don't you sit down with mom and dad before we go to work, and let's use our Bible to learn and to grow. We also see that sleep deprivation is up 56% in teens since 1991. A lot of kids, the majority of kids, are sleeping less than 7 hours a day. And that's not just because, you know, they have all these activities. Yes, they have a lot to do, but it's because most of them take this in their rooms. And they just stay up watching YouTube for hours or scrolling or commenting or Snapchatting or whatever. And then when they finally do go to sleep, it's sitting right there. So it's pinging and buzzing and lighting up. And they're constantly looking to see if it was important. And they'll respond. And if not, they'll just put it down. But it's all the time. So another practical is, you know, teach kids what an alarm clock is. It's called discipleship. Show them how to get up without this thing. I don't think any kid, this is my personal opinion, should have this in their room. No matter how much you trust them, no matter how great of a kid they are, just for their own safety and sleep, to be able to disconnect and have some Sabbath rest time away from this thing on a daily basis would be really helpful. We use sleep time, or downtime, I think is maybe what it's called on the iPhone, where I have it set every day at 9 o'clock. My phone basically shuts down outside of texts and calls. I have all these apps switched off where after 9 and before 7 a.m., I can't get on Instagram or social media or even Safari. I just can't. And so I know I either have to talk to my wife or, you know, talk to my kids or spend time with the Lord before I get to work or whatever it may be. And I've set up this way that I don't have these distractions. And there are ways, praise the Lord, that the iPhone is actually improving to help us with some of these issues. And we can talk a little more about those. Over the last 15 years, teens have become significantly less interested in both marriage and anything spiritually related. You know, technology is helping to change the way that kids are actually viewing their future. And so you look at a kid and what he's looking at, if there's a marriage that's really healthy, a family that's really healthy, they're probably not flaunting it on social media, so a kid's not seeing what that looks like. So they don't have a lot of interest in that. To be married is to be old and disconnected and lame, and why would I want that? I love the freedom. I love the connection that I'm getting. Churches are becoming more and more known for what we're against than what we're for on social media. And so why would a kid want to be a part of that? And it's changing the way that they connect and view their future. This is probably the most alarming and one of the ones we hear the most when it comes to technology, but studies show a positive correlation between high technology use in teens. So if a kid is using a lot of technology, they are more likely to be depressed, unhappy, lonely, and suicidal. In fact, suicide rates are up just over 30% in teens since 2011. And there's lots of factors for that, bullying, anxiety that comes from feeling like you're missing out or you're not enough or whatever, just comparison. But the simple thing is there's a correlation between the more technology you use, the more unhappy that you are because you're constantly looking at other people. Now, those are just national statistics, right? What about our FSM kids? Surely they don't struggle with these things. So we actually sent out a survey to some of our FSM kids, and I want to show you five or six of the responses that we got. We asked them, and we had 150 responses, which isn't everyone, but it's quite a few. How many hours per day on average do you spend on technology? About 50%, 49.3, says probably between 2 to 4. And let's be honest, they probably don't know. These numbers aren't super accurate. And in fact, I think the ones who said 1 to 2 hours are lying because they, even though we told them the study is anonymous, they're like, no, this is going to get pulled back to me somehow. But 32% said over 4 hours a day. And when you add up the 2 to 4 and the over 4, you get over 80% of kids are spending at least 2 hours a day. And I get some of that's for school, and they have assignments due, but I think most of this is probably not school-related. And it's just the things that they're experiencing. We asked which apps they were using on a daily basis. This one's hard to read, but 76% said Instagram daily. 75% said YouTube daily. I didn't know that YouTube was that popular, right? But people scroll on it all the time. Those of you with young boys are like, yeah, that's all they look at is YouTube. 63% said Snapchat, so about 2/3, and 62% said Netflix every day. And so there are some that are hitting all of these every single day. We ask kids, what are the positives and negatives of your technology use? And some of the positives that they said were connecting with people. This is how we communicate now. It's fun. There's cool cat videos, one kid said. You stay up to date with people. This is actually how you date people nowadays. I was talking with a senior in high school. She was in my wife's cell group this last year, and she had just started dating one of our FSM guys. And I was like, what was it about so-and-so that really made you go like, yeah, I want to date him? And she just wasn't trying to be funny or anything. She's like, he's the one who started responding to my snaps. Like, I snap all these guys every day, and a lot of them ignore it, but he's the one who started responding. So I was like, oh, maybe he's into me. Maybe he likes me. And this is the way that they are introducing relationships on a daily basis. What are the negatives? The list was a little bit longer. These are what students are saying. I judge people more. I compare myself more. Experience pornography, depression. It's a waste of time. Addiction, jealousy, inappropriate pictures. I develop less of a filter. There's bullying, unhappiness, insecurity, FOMO, or fear of missing out. One girl said this, and remember, this is a girl. Not only does it lead to comparison, but it leads to lust, self-doubt, depression, and more. Yes, it's fun, but in the end, it becomes an idol. And I'm no longer seeking God's approval when I'm so invested in social media. These are kids being honest in this survey, our own kids. It said foul language, but there's bad cat videos. We don't want those. It takes up a bunch of quality time that I could be having with other people. A lot of negatives. We asked them, what misconceptions do your parents have about you and technology? The overwhelming response is that they say it's all bad, that it's the devil. Like everything technology is the devil. Or that it's all a waste of time. Parents think everything I do is just a waste of time when actually I'm doing some things that aren't. They said, parents don't know the secret stuff. They don't know about Snapchat My Eyes Only. They don't know about Safari private browsing. They haven't disabled any of that on my phone. They don't know about the secret calculator apps that I have that hide the bad apps that I'm using. Like, they just don't know these things. And they said that parents think the phone is the root of all my problems. Like, I actually have other issues unrelated to my phone, but my parents always relate it back to my phone, every time. They say they don't really know my sins or my struggles. And one kid said, I don't know, they're always on Facebook. And, like, I think that's so true. Is like, kids are going, like, my parents do all this. Like, they don't know what's going on with me because they can't get off their own phone. We asked, this is one of my favorite that we asked. I love this. This should give you some hope. Some of this is depressing. Most of this is depressing, but we are getting to hope, I promise. And this is one of them. We asked kids, if you had a whole day with nothing scheduled, which of these sounds most ideal to you? 44%, almost one in two kids said, I wish that I could spend a whole day with my family and or friends without any technology. Almost half of our kids, almost 75 kids said that out of 150. Yet, maybe one, if we're lucky, does that on a weekly basis, where they say, hey, today we're going to disconnect and we're going to spend time with family and friends. Maybe one. Why is that? I'll give you my thoughts here in just a minute. But we see, like, they long for these things. They long to disconnect with things and to connect with people. We asked them, any final thoughts you want us or parents to know? And one kid said, having it and not having it both gave me anxiety. Social media gave me anxiety when I had it, and it caused me to sin, so I deleted it. But not having social media has given me even more anxiety because I feel lonely, that less people talk to me, and anxious that I don't always know what's going on. And so I've heard Sarah Schaefer say, it's like a tightrope, that if you lean one way, you're going to fall. If you lean the other way, you're going to fall. Neither of these sound like great options, having it or not having it. Other kids said, most people have the same opinion, but they're too scared to admit it. One said life is turning into the Matrix, and they wanted us to know that. I'm surprised they know what the Matrix is. I'm really proud. One said, literally, this is what they wrote. This is all they wrote. What are your final thoughts? Please monitor what we do. Please. They're crying out. One said, I get made fun of for not looking at porn. I'm actually in the minority. And another said, now that I think about it, it's honestly pointless. And so I think kids know and see the negatives. And here's my summary of this. I think they are scared to admit it, because they are afraid if they do, if they admit that they have an issue with their phone or they're struggling with pornography or anxiety or whatever, that a parent's just going to take it away, that it's an all or nothing. So I'm going to hide all of this, hold all of this in, because I can't be honest with you. If I tell you I struggle with porn, I'm not going to have a phone for a month. You're just going to take it away. And so we have to be able to respond to kids, because they're telling us how they really feel, with a lot of grace and truth. And so what's the answer? We could talk for weeks or hours about, you know, what are the statistics, what are the problems, but what's the cure? And I think it's found in Scripture. And there are lots of helpful things in Scripture, even to help us with technology, even though that word is never mentioned because it didn't exist in that time. But look at this. I appeal to you, therefore, Romans 12, 1 and 2, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing, you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. We, our students and us, live in this tension of conforming to the world, but being transformed. Like, our natural desire is to conform to the patterns around us. But Scripture emphasizes and tells us, don't be conformed to the patterns of this world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, by a relationship with Jesus. And we live in this constant tension. And I think this is the help for a lot of us, is figuring, if we can figure out, how do we become transformed? It's that age-old saying of being in the world but not of the world. How can my kid have access to some of these things? We have to give them a phone eventually, right? They can't live in a cave. How can they be in it but not completely conform to it? The good news is, if we're wanting our kids not to conform, this next generation are actually nonconformists in a lot of ways. For example, materialistically, a lot of us, including myself, when we bought things growing up, we did it to fit in. Like, we wanted to buy certain things or certain clothes or whatever because we wanted to fit in. Nowadays, people are purchasing things to stand out. They actually want to be different. They want to look different on social media. They want to paint themselves as something different and not the same as everybody else. So how do we capitalize on that desire that they have innately and show them that the best thing that they can transform to is not some unique, different person than everybody else, but someone who finds fulfillment in the only place you can really find it, in a relationship with Jesus, not conforming to what every other aspect of the world tells you that you should be. And so we show them the love and grace that Jesus has for us by showing them love and grace as parents. I think it's one of the most powerful things we can do. We'll talk a lot about habit and heart this morning, but that'd be a big takeaway that we should be pursuing when there's issues that come up, whether it's technology, pornography, social media, whatever, pursuing the heart behind it, not the habit itself. Kids are expecting us to address the habit. You look at porn, let's take your phone away. And they're going to be met with a lot of surprise when we say, hey, let's not talk about that. I want to know how you're really feeling. Like, how does this make you feel? What are the things that you're really struggling with that you wish you could get rid of, but you don't know how? How can I care for you and love you well? That type of thing. Teaching them that following Jesus looks different. If I were to sum up the practicals that we'll cover in the panel time and the takeaways that we'll go over that are on the sheet, if you guys don't have the sheet, we can pass some out to you. Kyle can bring some around to you back there if you want to raise your hand if you don't have one. But I would summarize it with this. Moderation. Kyle, they're back there. Moderation and conversation. So in any of these things, when we're talking about social media engagement, technology engagement, how can we do it in moderation? So how can we not lean to one end of the spectrum where we either fully release our kid with no boundaries whatsoever and we say, hey, I'm going to fully trust you until you show me that I can't? And how do we not put them in a prison where we say, you can't have anything? How do we engage them with some, you know, guardrails? Say, we want you to have this, but here are some restrictions and here's why we're putting these in. So moderation. One of the things that you can do with an iPhone is this idea of screen time or downtime. So with downtime, you can set it to be completely shut down outside of the apps that you want to be open for whatever time of the day you specify. So you can tell kids, like, hey, after 7 p.m., like, we're going to shut down social media. That's 7 to 10 time or 7 to 9, that's our family time. And you can put it on their phone for them. But also there's screen time limits that you can put on apps where you say, hey, yeah, we want you to have Instagram. You get it for an hour a day or 30 minutes a day because we want to know how to have something but to be able to not have it as well and to know how to disconnect from it. And the iPhone, for once in these latest updates, actually gives us the accessibility to be able to do that. And if you don't know how to do that, you can look it up. I'll also stick around for a little bit and kind of walk you through some of those things. But the other big thing is conversation. In everything, not just putting up boundaries or guardrails, but always engaging our kids with conversations about these things. And so always asking them how things are going, always coming down to their level to ask them to teach you. One of the things that I've learned from the Schaefers in regards to this is they parent, and you'll hear some of this from Sarah, is that, like, I learn more from my kids than I teach them. They're the experts. And just having conversations shows them that I care. Hey, will you teach me how Snapchat works? Why do you take a picture of your forehead? Like, what's the point of that? Can you just explain it to me? And they're like, yeah. So here's my, like, they love you engaging on their level, and it's really, really helpful for them. Moderation, another key is Sabbathing. It's one of the takeaways that we have, but being able to pull away for an extended period weekly. So you have the daily Sabbath where you set some screen time limits, but man, our family, we disconnect from our phone one day a week. And there's a way, you're probably like, how can I do that? What if somebody needs to reach me? What if there's an emergency? All that. There are ways to set up where people can still reach you. You can set up automatic text replies that say, hey, I'm disconnected from my phone today, spending time with family. But if you need me, just text urgent and it'll come through. That actually exists on the iPhone. You can do the same thing with calls. If you can set it up to where your favorites can call you no matter what. So if you have your mom or your dad or your sister or your brother, whoever on your favorites, their calls will come through. Or anybody's calls will come through if they call you twice within 3 minutes. So there are ways that you can turn your phone off, keep it on loud, but put it on downtime where it's sitting over there. It will ping if there's an emergency and you don't have to worry about it. What if we taught our kids that we disconnected on a daily and weekly basis? Another big thing, another practical is limiting adult content on the phone. I think everybody's phone, parent or kid, whatever, doesn't matter, needs to have adult content limited. It takes away private browsing. on Safari. If you don't know what private browsing is, I've prayed that like anything I reveal wouldn't further hinder any of you who are struggling with this. But it's a place where they can go click, search, and hide anything they want. And as soon as they get back into regular Safari mode, it goes away. All the history, gone. But when you limit adult content, it goes away. And the reason I say parents is because statistics show a lot of us struggle with pornography or looking at inappropriate things, but also kids can get your phone when you're not even looking. And so you don't want to open them up to that as well. Last thing on moderation is that, devices aren't babysitters. This is especially if you have younger kids. It kills me when I go to a restaurant and I see a couple engaging in conversation and their kid just sitting over there with headphones and an iPad. I'm like, man, what are we telling them? Like, if you act up enough, I'm going to give you this because I just want to have a conversation with mom and dad. Or you're not worthy to be in this conversation. This is our time. Like, if you want to have an intentional conversation, just get a babysitter, right? In 2010, when the iPad was released, I think it was a couple months after, Steve Jobs was asked what his kids thought of the iPad. You know what he said? They haven't used it. Because we limit the amount of technology that our kids use. Someone compared that to the cardinal rule of a drug dealer, that you don't get high on your own supply. Like, seriously, Steve Jobs knows what these things can do. And he's like, we're going to limit how much technology that they have access to because I want our kids to be healthy. As the panel comes on up, we'll summarize with this. Today's technology encourages us to create our own world and then live in it. That's what kids are told. Like, develop who you want to be and then live in that world, where people tell you what they like about you. You can message people privately. You don't even have to do face-to-face contact with anyone. But the church and family should challenge that tendency. And we should be the people that engage face-to-face. And yes, we have these things, but we know how to have a healthy relationship with them. And we disconnect when we don't have a healthy relationship with them, to reconnect with each other, reconnect with the Lord, and to teach our kids what healthy boundaries look like. These companies aren't going to stop developing these things. Why? Because it's how they make a living, right? And so if we're waiting on the government or institutions, marketplace, whatever, to put regulations on things, it's probably not going to happen. And so we have to step in, and that's why we wanted to have these conversations together. These are our experts at all things technology. So I'll introduce them, and then the way this is going to work, they'll each talk for a minute or so, just kind of some opening thoughts, and then we want to open it up to any questions that you guys have in any field related to phone, computer, all that kind of stuff. And so I'll let them introduce themselves, however y'all want to go.
Okay, my name is Mike Luttrell. We live in Springdale. My wife and I have a daughter in college and a set of twins that are seniors in high school. I also serve on the school board in my community. I'm in the insurance business, wholesale group at our home. So lots of different hats when it comes to technology. It's interesting, this is the second time Hunter's referred to us as experts. So in the first service, he's doing the prayer at the 9:30 service. And you know the flash flood deal on your phone that goes off and goes crazy? I was the very last one to get it turned off during your prayer, just so you know that I could not get that sound turned off, so I'm sorry about that. So
there's
my status as an expert. But anyway, it's an interesting situation. You know, when I think about Hunter talking about conversations, just how important and how helpful that is, and when I think about the other folks that are on this panel and how early on when Debbie and I came to Fellowship, knowing that FSM and Fellowship would partner with us in raising our kids, I mean, this is living proof of it right here, that our cell group leaders and serve our students in FSM, and what a great help that is to all of us. So if your kids aren't there yet, when they will be, and you're scared to death as a parent going through stuff, great resources. And I think about the kids or the college students that come to our home on Wednesday evening and spend time with the boys to talk about stuff that, quite frankly, I don't understand. When I was asked to do this, my first call and figuring out, well, not my first call, but a call this past week, was to phone a friend. So I thought I'd call Sam Hannon because I thought, well, he might know a thing or two about some of this. I was reminded when I found some notes years ago when Sam and Amy talked about just parenting in general, and just as I tried to think about how that applied to what we do as parents in dealing with technology. So the four things that they talk about were commands at an early age of life, coaching, consulting, and cheerleading. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, it's great stuff. Go back and do it. But when I think about the things that we did, some of which we were intentional and consistent about, and some of them we always weren't consistent about, quite honestly. But, you know, in terms of commands, all right, there's certain things that as an early age we're not going to allow our children to do. So whether that's certain apps or certain devices, you're just not going to have them yet and you're not ready for them. And that may change depending on each kid in your home. Mm-hmm. The next part is coaching. I remember something early on that Debbie did with our children was, okay, let's get set up with social media platforms and let's set up your password together. So, you know, immediately knew how to access the content that they might post or that they might see. Also part of that process was, hey, if you're going to post something, you need to let us look at it first. And I know technology is more about just social media, but that's where we are in our life. But anyway, just some coaching and process of whether that should be something you put online or not. Consulting, as they get older and more wise. Just this past week, my 18-year-old son asked me, hey, Dad, I'm getting ready to post this. What do you think? I thought, okay, great. We've had some of those conversations that maybe has allowed him to feel comfortable enough to ask me if that was something or right that should go out there. And then the fourth part of it that I'm not there yet is the cheerleading, but we'll get there soon enough. But really those four things that Sam and Amy talk about in that parenting deal can really be applied, and you know, we've been able to use that along the way. That's it.
Yeah, so
Wyatt, come on, rookie.
Yeah, so good morning. My name is Wyatt Despain. I'm a senior down at the University of Arkansas. I also happen to lead a group of 11th grade high school students at Bentonville. So I get both current and getting to see how that's impacting your students' lives in regards to technology. And as I was considering kind of what I wanted to share with you guys, both as potential parents of teenagers, current or former, is that the world around us is technology-based, and I think that that's going to be really hard for us to step away from if we're looking just to fight this by getting rid of it. As Hunter had mentioned, in the classroom, your students are using technology in ways that you probably couldn't have dreamt of when the iPhone dropped however many years ago. It's amazing what students are being asked to do, but also what all they can achieve with technology, so I think that's important to know. But I don't think that that removes our responsibility and our accountability scripturally to protect our students and our children from all the dangers that technology and social media have. And so I think where our accountability in scripture comes from is Hebrews 12:1, which tells us to lay aside every weight and sin, which clings so closely. And I think what's important to keep in mind about social media is that the presence of Instagram in your students' lives, or how much they or on social media, may not necessarily be a sin at first glance. However, it can be a weight that is pulling them away from their intimacy with Jesus. And so as you are navigating that, as how to handle that in your family and as a parent, one thing that I would have the confidence and the courage to say is that while there are strengths, there are benefits to social media, it's never worth the cost of your son or daughter stepping into death and destruction through sin. And so keep that in mind as you guys are approaching what is worth having in my student's life, what is allowing them to pursue their faith authentically, and how can we manage that together as a team.
Nice.
Great, thank you. I'm Sarah Schaefer, and I have five kids, ranging from 15 down to 7. And so, you know, as I think about this important topic of technology, I kind of want to zoom out just a little bit from that. And I wrote my thoughts out because I wanted to be able to communicate them to you, so I'm just going to read them to y'all. Relationship is key. I'm sure you guys have heard it said your kids don't care. I'm sorry. I'm sure you guys have heard it said, your kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Making sure that I'm listening far more than I'm talking is so important. What I think is not nearly as important as what my kids think. I need to take time to be able to listen to them, hear them, and respond to them out of their need and not out of my fear. And I think that's super important because I think social media, technology, all of this is new since we were kids. And so we don't know. It's an unknown. It's uncharted territory. So we don't really know how to navigate it. So it brings up a lot of fear for us as parents. A huge part of this process is me being in touch with my own stuff. I have to be able to navigate my own heart and what my kids' behavior, words, and actions do to me. Let's all just admit that sometimes being a parent is incredibly embarrassing, provokes a lot of fear, and a lot of other emotions we don't know how to navigate. Our kids are going to make decisions that impact us and how we respond to them in those moments when we feel embarrassed or fearful or something else is laying a foundation for them. That is the time that is so important to respond well to our kids when we're feeling that way. Loving my kids requires an awareness of my internal world. Because we did not grow up with cell phones, social media, and technology like we have it today, it can evoke a lot of fear in us. Really, if I'm honest, I have wanted to put my kids in a hole until they're 25 and then bring them out and let them interact with the world. But this would be incredibly detrimental for them. They need exposure to the pain, brokenness of our world under the loving and listening guidance that we alone as parents can offer. We are pioneers in learning how to interact with technology at a level that it now is. If your kids are sharing stuff with you that makes you terrified and want to run away, you're doing something right. Ask the Lord to reveal to you, manage your fear, take it to the Lord, ask him what's causing you to feel that way, and respond that way to your kids.
That's good.
Hi, I'm Josie Stitt. I am a senior this year at Heritage High School, and I also lead a group of sixth grade Rogers girls here at Fellowship. So I would say my biggest thing with social media is that it's not all inherently bad. In a lot of cases, it can be really good, but I think my generation and kids my age also realize how good life can be without it. Some of my favorite times are on our FSM mission trips, fall retreats, or even just time that we all spend together that we all just put our phones away, our leaders will take them, and we're forced to truly spend time with each other and interact. I think that's really important. Some of my biggest struggles with social media have been the comparison and the identity part. I think it's super easy as a teenage girl growing up in this world to find the perfect Instagram girl or find other girls around the area and try to be like them. And it's really easy also to try and create that image for myself without actually having that be who I am. And so I think a really big thing for me has been being surrounded by a good community of my leaders, such as Tori, my cell group girls, and other leaders, and my parents, just knowing that who I am on social media doesn't always reflect who I actually am and doesn't always reflect my heart, but it should. And so my heart is more important than my digital presence.
Love it. Hi, I'm Tori Vaughn. I'm on staff here at Fellowship, and I'm Hunter's counterpart in Bentonville. So I get to hang out with 7th through 12th grade Bentonville girls specifically. And so I feel like I have a very unique role because I get to meet with and hang out with college leaders and disciple them, but then also get to sit in on Wednesday nights on each cell group depending on the week. And so I get to hear all of the things that your daughters are saying and the things that they're processing and what's scary and hard. And a lot of the girls right now, specifically speaking, are just struggling with anxiety and comparison and identity and who they are in Christ. And a lot of that stems from social media and stems from this need to build this identity on the web that is portrayed to other people so that others would see them that way. And so a lot of these girls have no idea who they are because they've just tried to portray who they think they should be. Based on what other people have posted. And so we see girls in this spiraling effect of, I don't even know who I am, I don't know what I like, or this is who I want to be, but this is how people perceive me, and it gets really, really tangled. And so I think my two big points that I had for you guys as parents is one, that they I sit in group and I hear them, and they actually want to talk to you about this stuff, that, and they just don't know how. And so take the time to sit down and listen and ask them the hard questions. And so when I think about the identity piece, it hits close to home for me, because that's something that I struggled with for a very long time, of just building how I wanted to be perceived to the world via social media, because I loved the validation and the affirmation that it caused. And I don't actually want to look like all of these people. I want to look like Jesus. And so how do we change these conversations that we're having with our daughters and with our sons to, man, social media is not going away, phones aren't going away, but how do we use that actually to glorify the Lord? Because I think when we make that mind shift and our students start to get that, even if it takes the long haul, that they'll use it for the glory of God like it's intended. So I think it can be good. And that's, as cell group leaders and as staff, that's what I'm constantly pushing with girls. It's like, okay, you posted that. How is that glorifying to the Lord? Or you said this to this girl, or you made this caption. How is that glorifying to the Lord? And just engaging in conversation with them like that, where that's their initial response when they send a Snapchat or they post something on Instagram or they send a tweet, is like, is this honoring to the Lord? And how am I set apart in this way? And so it's the long haul, but we're in it with you, so.
That's good. Hey, one clarifying thing. We're talking about phones a lot, and I was reminded by a dad after the last service. He came up, he's like, man, y'all talked a lot about phones, but I think it's important to remember that it's not just phones. So we haven't given our 13-year-old son a phone yet, and we just found out 6 months ago that he is deeply addicted to pornography. He's tried to commit suicide. He's talked about it online and all of these different forums that he found through a friend's iPad, and then found a way to use it back home through our computer, all that kind of stuff. So it's not just phones, but that's what we're talking primarily about. So before we kick it to questions, Wyatt, give us a little kind of preview of a couple of these apps that we've talked about, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. So in regards to social media, chances are most of your students have Instagram downloaded. It's probably the most popular, as Hunter's statistics showed earlier. Instagram is a visual-based social media platform. It's pictures with captions. Friends can like it, comment, repost it. Especially in a culture where things are being visually gratified by students, it's probably why it's the most popular. I think it's probably one of the more well-monitored social media platforms in regards to safety for your child. However, I will say that the definition of nudity nowadays is a lot less strict than I think it probably would be if you were to describe it to each other. And so pages will get as close as they can without crossing the line. And so your students are definitely still prone to negatives on there, but I think it's probably one of the more healthier sources of social media. Twitter is going to be pretty brief in content. There's about 140 character limit for your child to tweet something. Now they can attach a photo, they can attach a video, they can direct message someone. A lot of students use it to participate in class projects where they have to gain so many Twitter followers and share that with their classmates. However, I will say that Twitter was the first social media platform that I deleted because it has absolutely no nudity privacy content, policy, excuse me. So they can find, your students can find just actual pornography on there if they're willing and able to search for it. And so that's very scary to know that that's out there and available to your students on the tip of their fingers. In addition to that, Snapchat is a very, I don't even know where to start about Snapchat. It's so casual in the way that your students are interacting with one another, but it's also probably the most dominated way, as we were talking last service, in which students are interacting with one another. Sometimes students will use that as a replacement for texting one another, for calling one another, that they feel that they are communicating with their friends and their family through Snapchat and through a quite honest picture of their forehead with a couple of words describing what they're doing. It blows my mind that that's what's going on. And it's gotten to the point where I have some of my students for retreats, as Josie was talking about, where they don't have their phone. They will give their Snapchat login to a friend to maintain this concept that they've been sending pictures to somebody for 340 days, for 32 days. It means so much to them that they have a number next to this name that they have absolutely no relationship with in person. It could be someone at a different school, but it's literally they will just, as long as they send a picture of a black screen and a couple words to their friends, they feel as though that has fulfilled some hole in their life. And so I personally, as a cell group leader, let alone a college student, have major regards and hesitations for that being a safe platform for your family to consider. Now, I've used it, and I've used it quite comedically, I'd probably say, in my life.
Save the bees.
Yeah, save those bees. But I would say that that's one that you need to, as a parent, make sure that you're well monitoring as you guys navigate as a family what that looks like.
And I also would add to that, one that is new that I'm sure you guys have seen if you guys are on it, is TikTok is a new social media app that a lot of kids are using these days where kids can make videos. It's kind of like Vine, if you know what that is, but they make videos, and a lot of times they can choose pretty explicit songs to dance to, and so it's like Instagram where you can scroll, and we've seen some things with inappropriate dancing or just different stuff like that. And so that's another social media platform that I would monitor as well. So.
And in 6 months, we'll tell you the 8 new ones
that
you're going to have to be on. But as we've kind of mentioned those, one of the resources that you guys, that we want to point y'all to, that Tori has done a lot of research into, is at the bottom left of this page. It's called access.org. You can go on there, and you do have to purchase them, but you can spend $5 and learn anything you want about what a parent should know about Snapchat. And so it'll come with like this 15, 20 page, whatever document where they've done all the research. They tell you about all the features, the dangers, how kids use it, all that kind of stuff. And they've done this for parents. And so you can do that with TikTok, with Twitter, with Facebook, with Instagram, with whatever, with iPhones. How do we, you know, restrict and care for an iPhone, all that kind of stuff. So it's a good resource to look at. But we've got about, let's say, 15, 20 minutes for some Q&A. It is going to fly, so try to keep your questions succinct, and we'll try to keep our answers succinct. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Just for the recording, will you talk about Snapchat, My Eyes Only? That's okay. You're good.
So there is a secret feature on Snapchat, and it's a protected password secured place on the app where your student can put different snaps or different pictures of things that they maybe don't want others to see or they don't want you to see. It can be accessed through a password, and that's basically all there is to it, but it's...
So you could have passwords set up on their phone and all that, but like this is a different password that they will create that then they would have to tell you.
Can you tell that by looking at their Snapchat account?
I think all of them have it, correct?
I think every account has it, but I think within that, I think you have to set up the My Eyes Only.
Yeah. So it's down there, but if like you click on it and it says set up a password, that means they haven't used it. Mm-hmm. If it says enter the password, that means they've used it.
I don't think so. So it is...
Yes.
So it is a password inside of the app. So this password might be completely different from the password you need to actually log into the account.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Have you all used any monitoring apps or programs? And if so, which ones are good?
Any monitoring apps or programs that you use on the phone or computer even?
I'll just chime in. We have not. And again, I think part of that was going back to learning really what you're in the middle of. And I remember one of the first ones of these you may have done a few years ago, just hearing about the first time. So we have not. But
we have used a lot of different apps in monitoring things. And where we have landed, what we are on right now, is just Apple has come out with some great features. I don't know if it was two operating systems ago or this past one. I don't know. I can't keep up. But they have great features now that you can do it all through Apple. So we actually don't pay for anything anymore. We have a lot of different things. We've tried everything, I think. Not everything, but we've tried a lot of things as it's come through. And I find that what Apple offers right now is really good.
Let me speak to what Apple offers. So it will monitor some things. And so, like, you can set up, I think I said this in the service, but you can set up to limit adult content, which will prevent you from searching inappropriate things through a web browser on your phone, that type of thing. You can set limits on how often an app can be open. But, like, if you limit adult content from the iPhone, it doesn't limit adult content on Twitter, if that makes sense. It limits it on a web browser. And so there, with any of this, any type of guardrails, monitoring, whatever we talk about, there are 10 ways around each of them. And so as we talk about these, they are good. It's just like if you know someone might break in your house, you're still going to lock the door, right? And so they may still find a way to break in, but at least you can lock the door. And so we're still going to put up some of these, but just know, like, that's why we say heart over habit. Having those conversations about what the kid's feeling, where their heart is, like, all of those types of things are way, way more important. I was meeting with a young man a while back, and he was struggling with pornography, and he came to me and just said, hey, can we just process this? And he goes, I've gotten to the point where I've deleted all of these apps off my phone because I deleted Safari, I deleted Twitter, Instagram, all that. And I just looked at him, I was like, okay, will you be honest with me? All of these are deleted. Can you still find pornography? He said, yes, sir. And I said, all right, don't show me pornography, but I want you to explain to me how you can find it. And he said, well, I go into GroupMe, and I search through the GIF or the JIF or whatever it's called, and I can get to a Google browser from that to search through Wikipedia that then gets me to a way where I can actually find pornography. People have found it through the Bible app. You can click on an ad that then takes you to a web browser that's separate that then you can find. Like, there are ways around it. And so that's why I say, like, yes, we want to set up boundaries and monitor and all that, but just know, like, none of that is foolproof. So if that's not scary, I don't know what is, right?
So are you pro monitoring programs or not?
I personally am. Again, it goes back to that, like, man, I think no parent or child should have a phone that doesn't have adult content restricted. I don't know why you'd want it, adult content. They shouldn't have private browsing. They shouldn't have these things. That's something that Apple has created to fulfill a need that people have that, I mean, we want to avoid. And so I'm definitely pro those things. I just don't think they're the ultimate fixes, if that makes sense.
And I think it's healthy to do that as well, because just one, like, one look, one content thing sends kids and anyone, humans, into a spiral. And so if we can do what God's given us to protect our kids, then I'm going to do everything we can. So,
and I would say, too, with that, I think it's the heart behind it. Mm-hmm. I think if I am presenting that to my kids as, you can't look at the, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to protect you, and coming down on them, but in humility saying to them, I need protection too. Left to my own, I will run and spend way too much time on my phone. And so I need some guardrails too put up in my own life. And so I think it's all how we approach that. Guardrails are good, but not coming from this direction, coming mm-hmm. from this direction, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Android phone. Do you recommend any safeguards?
So I am not the person to ask, but I do know that on our app, we have a document that talks about how to safeguard a Samsung. I haven't read it because I don't have one. But yeah, so for that one, I would say you're going to have to look at something like that probably. That would be better. You know, any of y'all have a Samsung? Blue text people? Nice.
Now, just the one thing I would say about guardrails and any form of monitoring, whatever technology you're using, is truly the heart is the issue. I think with any sin, it all goes back to the heart of, are we encouraging and shepherding our children based off the truths and promises that what God has to say is better than what this technologically advanced world has to offer? And so I think that begins just raising them up in a household that is believing and delighting in all that God has to offer, rather than kind of trying to figure out, okay, what can we allow and what can we not? Because at the end of the day, we're all prone to make mistakes. And so if you can rather have a house that is just rooted in the gospel and the truths of it, I think that it's going to serve your children much better than having to figure out adequately how are we going to defend against that.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, the app that we're referring to is actually the FSM NWA app. It's a separate app from Fellowships. It's just our student ministry ones. It has all the teachings we do on Sunday morning. It has all the resources that we cover, all the cell group curriculum, all of that. So if you want to know what your kids are learning and the resources that we're providing you, you can find them all on there. It's really easy to navigate. This one set it up. She's really good.
So Sam's teaching that...
Mike
was talking about. Sorry, I just had
it's
the
okay.
Mic.
It's okay.
Mike was talking
people
about.
People get
is
me
on
confused
well.
With Sam.
All I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's on there.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. So are Instagram's nudity policies also effective for just personal picture messaging?
No.
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very. Instagram is very similar to Snapchat on that front.
Yeah, they Instagram created that feature because they were jealous of Snapchat's activity. So.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely not our policy, so I'm sorry for that. But we want to be very respectful to parents. The question was, can y'all help support us? We don't want cell groups only communicating through Snapchat because we don't let our kids have it, that kind of thing. No, I think it's a good thing to bring up. The primary way that we try to communicate through cell groups is through GroupMe. But again, it's not foolproof either. But it is definitely better than Snapchat in that regard.
I'll just add real quick, too. I know that the cell group leaders for my son's group are mostly communicating with the boys through Snapchat to remind them that it's Wednesday nights at 6:30, because if they didn't remind them every Wednesday, I'm not sure they'd make it to our place. But there's a couple that don't use that, and really it's been important that those leaders understand the differences to communicate differently with them. So hopefully they're having those conversations too, or with host homes to be able to do that. Mm-hmm.
What do you find for girls is an issue with pornography?
Right. Well, you bring up a great point, because I wanted to say this in the first, at the 9:30 service, but that actually is something that we're finding way more and is not as talked about in the girls' side of ministry. But pornography and masturbation is something that we have to have conversations all the time with girls. And they are completely shameful, because the way that it's been portrayed is that it's just a guy struggle, and that's not, like, the case. And so we've had multiple conversations with cell group leaders and with girls where that's been something that's really hard for them because of what is exposed to them via social media. And so girls have lustful thoughts just like guys do. And so we're all human, and we're all broken, and we all fall short of the glory of God in that way. And so in the same way that guys in the past have had strong, like, restrictions, I encourage the same for girls, and also for the heart behind all of that. And also to encourage parents that, like, to have those conversations. It should be something that you talk about all the time with your kids, because if you're not, someone else is. They're definitely talking about it at school and the things that they see. And so for girls specifically, a lot of things that we see is this need for affirmation, this need for love and value. And so they will, if things get hidden, they will put themselves out there because they're like, I'm going to put this out here, but it'll go away immediately because I just want attention from this boy, or I want this affirmation. And so those are some of the things that we see with social media that girls are using it for, is for validation and love. And so it's kind of similar in the same way. So guys are looking at it, sometimes girls are putting it out there, vice versa.
We got time for one more. Yeah, that's a good reminder if y'all didn't hear. Just the school system can step in when they think inappropriate activity is happening and seize phones and go through them, that kind of thing. One more question. Yes, sir. We'll do these last two. Go ahead, Brandon. Yeah. Yeah, Covenant Eyes is a great monitoring system. It is paid, but it helps cover computers. A lot of the things we're talking about with restrictions and screen time and downtime, that's phone-based. And so Covenant Eyes is a great one that really helps. And you go, oh, I don't want to pay $10 a month. $10 a month is worth it, or 12, or whatever it is now. It was 10 when I was in college. Yes, sir, Drew. Yeah, so from y'all, when did you start having these conversations with parents or with your kids?
So for me, I got social media when I was in seventh grade. So about 14-ish, I would say. And the biggest thing that my parents did was to kind of be proactive and start to combat some unseen dangers was taking up phones every night before I went to bed. And that was really helpful. But then also just kind of like randomly, but like probably systematically and strategically saying, hey, like, do you mind if I go through your phone a little bit? Or, hey, do you mind if I like scroll through your Instagram? And so just like not knowing when that would be was really like a good accountability thing for me, saying like, oh, like, I just saw this thing. If my mom were to, like, take up my phone in a couple minutes, because I don't know if she will, would she be okay with saying this? Another big thing would be the community part of it. So just having my parents say, okay, like, if you were to have, like, your cell group leaders, like, look through your social media, like, would they be okay with it? And also having my parents on all of my social media accounts, so they are able to see what I'm posting, see what my friends are commenting, and be like having them be right there with me.
Yeah, I think I take a different approach in the fact that my parents, I think, just raised me in a home in which I recognize that I don't have to say yes to everything. Like, I feel comfortable that there are other avenues to get the same benefit from something that I'm trying to achieve in social media, or video games was a big part of my life. And so my dad was really just firm with the fact that that's the time that I'm wasting doing other possible beneficial things in my life. And so there's a balance between, I think, the heart for your kids and how you want to serve them and love them and shepherd them, but also being, you know, firm in the fact that I knew my dad was on social media, and you can go back and find just embarrassing photos of me on there if you want, of braces and trips to Arby's and all that stuff. It's something I wouldn't show my friends, but having, you know, an accountability that, you know, my family's name means something to me, and I want to represent them well in the way that I present myself on social media, and everything that I do is accountable to something bigger than myself.
I think I'll add from a parenting perspective, had the unique opportunity to be kind of a cell group leader. I think it was about seventh grade. And again, going back to what I said earlier about the conversations and the partnership with FSM and fellowship, you know, some of the conversations at that age were talking about that. So when my son and I would drive home, we had some of those conversations, and Debbie would talk more about the girls maybe, but in terms of my son, those were the times that he and I could really talk about it. Unfortunately, there were friends that made some mistakes, and so we could talk through some of that, and we could pray for some of them that, you know, hey, they're fighting us. And I was like, son, you and I aren't immune from it either. You know, we need to, you know, I'll pray for you, and you pray for me too, because that, you know, Satan's trying to get us however he can. And so that was probably about the first age that I remember he and I having that conversation.
If y'all can give us five more minutes, we'll be out of here, I promise.
One thing I would say, I think just the word pornography needs to be common in our homes, mm-hmm. that we need to say it a lot. When our kids were young, there's a book, and I think you guys actually told us about it, Drew, but it's called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. And so we have read that. It is a phenomenal resource if you guys have not seen that. But just teaching your kids about pornography, because it's not, if your kids are going to be exposed to pornography, they are going to be exposed to mm-hmm. pornography. It is having an action plan when they are exposed to it. So it is not prohibiting them from being exposed to it, because mm-hmm. we can't. It's everywhere. And so it is giving them the power they need to know how to make the decision when they are exposed to it. So it is a common word in our home, so much so that when our 7-year-old was 3, one of her twin brothers ran through the house naked, and she screams, pornography, at her brother. And so, I mean, it needs to be a common word in our home.
Yeah. Just to give you some perspective on that, I was 12 when I first found porn. That was in 2000. And so you think about how probably difficult it was to access it then and how easy it is to access it now. It's happening earlier and earlier and earlier. Hey, let me run through this really quickly with you. I'm a big fan of like 2 to 3 takeaways from a presentation. So I gave you 9, and I'm really sorry. But here we go. Takeaways, be a parent and a friend. It's kind of that tightrope thing of, man, am I supposed to be parent in this or friend in this? And I think it's got to be both. And you're going to lean one way or the other, but... well, if y'all know Scott Clark, who passed away this past year, is a mentor of mine, one of the greatest men that I ever knew. And I sat there weeping at his funeral as I listened to his sons speak about him. And the common theme was not only was he a great dad, but he was a good brother to them. He was a good friend to them. And he cared deeply about not just parenting, but releasing and preparing them and doing life with them. And I think all of y'all, depending on the age, the personality of your kid, all of that type of stuff, everybody's going to be different, but you have to do both, parent and friend. Seek heart before habits. We've talked about it so much. One of the most detrimental thing that you can do is when you find an issue just to attack the habit itself. Kids even mentioned that, like, they don't want that. They just want to know that you care. And so you may have to even come and say, hey, before we talk about this, I want you to know I'm not taking away your phone. That this is not going to happen. This is a safe place for us to process. I just want to have conversations with you and let you know that I love you and I want to care for you well. Sabbath regularly. On the app, I did a teaching back in our Rhythms Walking with God series on Sabbath. It's not the best teaching in the world, but for some of you, it might be something very new that you've never thought about, actually Sabbathing in the 21st century. Like, what does that look like to take a day where we as a family disconnect from the things of the world? So one of the things that we do is we put those phones away, we put it on Do Not Disturb, we try to disconnect and spend time together, and eating well and all these, it's a fun day for us. And it would be really healthy for y'all to do something like that with your kids. And just start with 2 hours. One of the things I remember Wyatt saying as we were processing through some of this stuff is like, man, for the parents who are behind, don't go all in. Like, please don't go all in. It would be detrimental to that kid. Start small with some of these things. Give them community. Put them in cell group. Like, encourage them to find those people who are going to encourage them well and do life with them and show them that face-to-face is important and show them by the way that you do face-to-face with them. Normalize the conversations. We've said it, multiple of y'all have said it, but, like, use the words pornography, masturbation. These words that, like, you may feel uncomfortable saying, but they hear them every single day. And when mom and dad says it in a way that is like, oh, we can actually talk about this, it opens up so many more conversations.